Moncrief on News Talk
with Gas Networks Ireland. Natural gas is compatible with a wide range of modern appliances. gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.
TV.
On the radio.
Roll it there, Colette.
Hey, how you doing?
Bazinga.
Well, I didn't expect the kind of Spanish Inquisition.
One for everybody in the audience.
It's going to be legendary.
You just crossed over into the Twilight Zone.
You have kids?
Three.
Oh, sorry. Did your profile say widower?
No, I'm a single parent.
What happened to your wife? Oh, sorry. You don't mind me asking.
She left.
She left?
That's right. Happens.
And now you're thinking what's up with him, right? What a drive a woman to walk out on her own family, her own home. What could be so bad about life with this man that a woman would do such an unforgivable thing?
I wasn't thinking that.
Well, you should, because it's the question I've asked myself for the last 11 months.
It's a question we're all asking ourselves. That's Come Home. It runs on Tuesdays on BBC One at 9 p.m. and on RTÉ at 10 p.m. John Fardy joins us once again. I have seen promos for this. I must say I wasn't tempted. It all looked a bit miserable.
It's dark, all right. There's no denying that. It's pretty good, though, I have to say. There's a bit of dark humour in it as well. That date that he's on there ends up rather disastrously when he drops condoms out of his wallet in an attempt to show pictures of his kids, and she said, "You won't be needing them," and gets up and leaves. We've all been there. But no,
I need pictures of my kids.
There is a dark humour to it, but there is also a darkness to it. So the wonderful Christopher Eccleston, who people will know as a Doctor Who, he's only famously for one season. He's been in movies. A lot of people remember as the chief detective in the early episodes of Cracker.
Yeah.
Do you remember that? Robbie Coltrane, and he was brilliant in that. And he really does that harassed everyman very well. And he's pretty harassed in this because it's the great taboo. His wife has left. Like, not since Kramer and Kramer have we had this idea that a woman would abandon her kids. And as it unfolds, it seems, but we're not entirely sure, that she did it for kind of, she was didn't want to be a mother anymore. That's what we were first led to believe. Now, there's a subplot going on where there's a woman who comes to his garage every day and sells sandwiches, and he starts...
He's a mechanic or something, is he?
He is a mechanic. Yeah, he owns his own place. And his son, who's dealing with the fallout of this, his eldest son, is working in the garage because he's dropped out of college because of the trauma of their mother leaving. So it's a whole family thing. This woman who delivers the sandwiches turns out is in an abusive relationship. It is pretty dark. With her husband, and he sees her in a pub one night, and he basically gets beaten up when he tries to defend her. Then they end up in bed together, and it seems to be getting...
So there's a use for the condoms then.
I'm not sure if they were used, but anyway, let's not get into that. But he then, really oddly, I don't want to give a spoiler away, but he finds out that his daughter has been seeing the mother who left.
Right.
And that changes things a bit. And then he actually goes to where the mother's now living and hides in her shower. And it gets really weird. Yeah, now, it's not as funny as it sounds in that way.
I know. I know that doesn't sound a bit. That sounded a bit jump the sharky, really.
Yeah,
to be honest,
it's not though. I've gone through it too fast. But what's really interesting is, and I don't want to give a spoiler away, but say in the last 10 minutes, the story gets really weird. In that, it's clear she's left for more reasons than we're aware of, but he's had something to do with it. So what I really like about this is, you don't know if it's a psychological thriller, you don't know if it might be a murder mystery. It's really cleverly done. And next week, and this is the grand old tradition of This Is On, and you can't really see it anywhere apart from the BBC player, but you can't see the next one. It's not dropping, as they say, until you see it on terrestrial TV. It's going to be told from the woman's side, played brilliantly by Paula Malcolm. So it's going to put a completely different sheen on it.
So there's kind of echoes of The Affair,
yeah,
for instance.
Exactly. Yeah. Very much. And then there's going to be a third episode. So I don't know what's going to happen, but I can't wait to see the next one. It's really good. And it's I know we referenced a lot of things like Jumping the Shark and Kramer versus Kramer, but it's very different. It really is.
Yeah, someone says, Christopher Eccleston, Doctor Who, that's who he is. Yeah. I was wrecking my head since Tuesday. Clearly I didn't care enough to Google it. But why would I when you're around, says Pete. Red says, I watched Come Home the other night. I thought it was excellent.
Yeah,
really great acting from the main guy. Delighted I have a new series to get my teeth into.
Mm.
So there you go. Well, kind of, it does sound actually more intriguing now that it's done from different points of views.
Yeah.
Now, some bits of TV news. Roseanne has returned.
And, indeed.
And it was, in fairness, a much-loved series. So
yeah, it's God, it seems like so much of its time back then, doesn't it? In the middle of the 90s, and they were all slobbering around on the couch and stuff. But it's back, and I don't know if that says something about there's an appetite for this, a blue-collar family in middle America. It got, in the new episode last night, 18.2 million viewers, which even for a large country like America is a lot. It was very good. It was so good, the ratings, in fact, that Roseanne herself got a call from Donald Trump himself. She's a fan, apparently, of his, and plays one in the show itself. And her sister, who's back in it, is a Hillary supporter. But Trump apparently wanted to talk to her about the ratings and how she did it and how well it was doing. And it was less about the show than the ratings. He just seemed to marvel at how good her ratings were, which says a lot, you know.
Perhaps that's you to work. And so are all the original cast.
More or less, most of them, bar one or two, yeah. And it's, as I say, a lot has changed, but little has changed. John Goodman is in it, and they're still, you know, rolling around, and it's the ebbs and flows of what's happening in America and not having enough money to pay for the doctor and stuff. So I don't know if it's pitched at, you know, the American heartland, which Trump supposedly owns, but they're actually suffering from Trump's policy. So I'm not really sure who it's aimed at. But 18 million people plus watched it last night.
And presumably it recognises the fact that time has passed.
Oh, yeah. No. They've all moved on.
The kids are all grown up and
stuff. The kid is back from college and they have jobs and stuff like that. Yeah. But it's still very much a family drama in the middle of America with this small minutiae of blue collar life. So little has changed in that regard, you know. Yeah.
What's Roseanne been doing in between?
Oh, you know, various crazy things. It's been 22 years, I think. So.
Crikey. Yeah. Of course, that's Will and Grace came back and now this.
Yeah,
and
there's probably God knows what else is going to happen. Friends, any minute now, I'm telling you.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah, I reckon. And talking of Friends, you may remember about 3 months ago, I think, would that be? 2 months ago, Netflix, or maybe it was before Christmas, I can't remember. Have the whole of Friends dropped on Netflix. Remember that? Mm-hmm. It was a big deal and all the millennials were not quite getting it because there was some uncool stuff and Ross was married to a lesbian and stuff and there was a big uproar on Twitter. Do you remember all that? Yeah. Well, now the British Bake Off is dropping all 7 series. So people are delighted and it's in time for Easter.
Yeah. But I think the British Bake Off played on another American channel and they gave it a different name.
Oh, yeah. But this we will be able to watch this.
Ah, right, okay.
This Friday or Saturday, yeah.
Yeah.
Which is going to be great because I missed the early episodes. People love the Bake Off.
They do love the Bake Off. Now, Peter Kay, what's he up to?
Well, as you know, he's made no announcement whatsoever since 8 months ago when he cancelled his massive tour.
And it was a family thing.
Yeah, and nobody knows what's going on. There's been huge speculation. Well, he's tweeted that car share, which people have loved, which kind of ended on a cliffhanger episode at the end of series 2, is going to be shown. There's going to be a special charity screening of the next episode, which will kind of get over the cliffhanger moment where the lady Kayla made a pass, and people who watched that show loved that moment, and it was almost like The Office kind of would Dawn and Tim get together. So I suppose the more important thing is here, he has resurfaced because there's been nothing from him. And you know yourself, to cancel like those tours like John Bishop and he do are titanic undertakings.
Yes,
they really are. Like it's like the Rolling Stones. You know, they've booked out venues the size of stadiums.
No, I mean, that's a very apt comparison because Peter Kay could fill and does fill, you know, Rolling Stone sized venues.
Absolutely. I've been to one of his gigs in a Rolling Stones sized venue. Maybe the Rolling Stones won't. Well, a Rolling Stone size venue. But anyway, so this is good news. I'm not sure what the episode, if it's going to be a follow up to the cliffhanger one. There's also talk of a improvised episode. They weren't clear about what the episode is actually going to be, but there is going to be a charity screening somewhere in the UK in April to watch one of these episodes. In Blackpool, of course. Sorry, in the Blackpool Opera House, where he's Mr. Blackpool. Oh, Mr. Bolton, yeah.
Yeah, but there's no indication of what it was that brought about the cancellation of the tour.
No, and I wouldn't like to speculate.
Yeah, and it's a family thing, so, you know, we have to respect his privacy.
Indeed
we do have to take a commercial break. There are a couple more shows to talk about after this.
At the simplest level, the norms that I would say are driving use of performance-enhancing drugs are those that simply tell us your task is to concentrate, to perform at the highest capacity that you possibly can, and to do it for as long as it takes, whether it's at an investment bank or whether it's a homework assignment. The question is, how can you come out on top?
There you go. That's a clip from Take Your Pills, a documentary that's running on Netflix at the moment. John Farley's still with us. This is about, well, I suppose it's like pills, stuff like Adderall and stuff, but being used in the wrong context.
Yes, to an extent. Yeah, yeah. Well, pretty much. Adderall primarily, and also Ritalin to a lesser extent. You know, I was reading a thing, someone compared it to like Elvis was a drug addict by the end of his life, but they reckon so many people missed it because he was on these prescribed pills, whereas these famous rock stars who were putting spikes into their veins, it was a lot more clear. And in a way, that's what the director of this is saying. In America at the moment, they have an opiate crisis, as you know, and crystal meth and heroin is rampant. And the point of this documentary, as they see it, because I'm not so sure, it's a little problematic in some ways, but the point of this documentary is ADHD drugs and medicines, we should call them, have been oversubscribed and got into the hands of the wrong people, because they interview college students, they interview one music promoter who's bizarrely called just Blue, they have an NFL player, and interestingly they have a lot of these Silicon Valley workers. And they're all taking and admitting to taking Adderall, which was originally, I mean, it goes, there's actually interesting history about where it came in the 1880s, and it's, you know, amphetamine at base, right, in a very small dose. Well, smaller dose than would be on street drugs, for instance. So when ADHD was diagnosed and named as a condition, they started prescribing Adderall for it. Now, one of the effects of Adderall, and what most people attest to it, is that it for a lot of people, focuses you. And that's the whole point of giving it to people with ADHD, that you're able to stay on one particular thing, and there's a placebo in that because you're so focused, you feel a lot better.
Yeah.
So she interviews all these college students who are in Harvard and places like that, who get it through doctors who are too, you know, loose-wristed with prescriptions, and then people are buying it online. And according to this documentary, every student in any college in America is taking it in order to do their tests. The same supposedly goes for these guys in Silicon Valley and for a lot of sports people. And it's smart drugs, in essence. I suppose, you know,
which makes it sound benign, though, of course, when
you
call them smart drugs.
Exactly. And the whole point of this is that they're not benign, and that it's a very dangerous thing to go from maybe the age of 15 until your mid-30s taking these pills all the time. But what the documentary misses slightly, and, you know, I think it's all Michael Moore's fault to an extent, that all these documentaries, because they're trying to be very sharp documentaries, they have to be broadsides in a way. They have to be very slanted. And this is, not that there isn't a problem. I mean, it's a $13 billion industry, this smart drug business, right? But what it misses out on completely is, you know, ADHD is a condition, and these drugs or these medications help with that. Now, it's a travesty, I think, if people are taking them for the wrong reasons, but the documentary could have, I'm sure, included just as many parents going, you know what, this was a major relief to us. Now, there is some of that, but we don't get much of that. That parent saying, you know, this was a major help to us in raising our children. Now, there is also an argument that it's even being over-prescribed in children, you know, and that a restlessness is being too eagerly kind of diagnosed as ADHD, and Ritalin is immediately prescribed. So it's not as balanced as it should be. It's entertaining, and it's certainly pause for thought, but a little uneven, I would suggest.
But then again, they're not, I assume, just blaming the pill per se for this.
Oh,
but
no.
the fact that the kids are using it to cram for exams.
Yeah, exactly. And they're also blaming, and they have some of the doctors and psychologists who were involved in the early diagnosis of ADHD, who said, we made money on this, and drug companies made money on this, because there was money to be made. So that that's where the blame kind of lies. And there's a mea culpa from some of the doctors in it as well, which is quite well done, you know?
Yeah, which again is a familiar absolutely theme in the United States, especially in going back to the opioid crisis and over-prescribing painkillers
and that's all that all kind comes of stuff. But I suppose it is a salutary kind of thing in that because they're so worried about heroin and opioids, they may be missing just how pepped up a lot of American people are, you know, and that whole line between, oh, well, I'm taking prescribed pills, so there's nothing actually wrong with me, going back to the Elvis thing, you know?
Yeah. Just going back as well to Come Home that John was telling us about before the break, that does sound very like The Affair. Now, that's because that's a stylistic thing it has in common, that it's from Christopher Ecclestone's point of view in the first episode, then from his estranged wife is the second. Has no one an original idea anymore? Says, well, using a stylistic device or borrowing one isn't necessarily a sign of unoriginality, I would have thought. Angie says, I loved Come Home. Christopher Ecclestone is brilliant in this. Also in the other great drama, The A Word.
Oh, yeah.
He's so good, says Angie. Yeah, and he was in, there was a thing years ago called Our Friends in the North that he was in, as was James Bond.
Daniel Craig.
Yeah, yeah. There was a great cast in that, actually. Of course, they were all much younger then. I'm a teacher, so I'm off and a little bored. Oh, you poor thing, guys. and she's delighted about the bake-off coming. Somebody else says, if you watch the new Handmaid's Tale trailer, it looks amazing. I'm excited beyond for the new season. Any idea when it's back? Apparently around May 2018 is when they're saying there or thereabouts. Anyway, we'll move on to our third show of the day. It is the Hardy Books. You can catch it on RTE2 on Thursdays at 10:35. Here's a clip.
Telling your best friend you had to move out. You had to move on. That conversation was never going to be easy.
Here's what I'm saying. See the two boys there, the two crows?
Yeah.
Now, your man on the right is the Buzzcrow, and the lad on the left is the Eddie Crow. Two of them are in the house having a great time in the nest, right?
Yeah.
But then this other new crow, that one there, it's the Kira Crow. She's come into the mix. So imagine Eddie and Kira Crow had to go down to the house, down the road, and move in there. What would you say about the crack there? If you were that crow...
God only knows it'd happen to me. I love living with you, buddy.
There you go. That's the Hardy Books. It's been a while since they were last on TV.
It's 3 years, and they had a movie in between as well where they all went off to see the Euros, which was pretty funny as well. This is 10 years more or less since they started, when they were just those webisodes, remember? And then RTE in their wisdom took it on. I love the Hardy Books. You know, I know people find it kind of crude. It is crude. Juvenile, absolutely, but it's kind of like I hadn't watched it in years. It's almost like I'd forgotten about them, and I watched it on Thursday night and I laughed a lot. It was kind of like meeting friends from college, and I mean this as a compliment to who are still, you know, the piss heads sitting around when they should be at lectures. How are you, Johnny boy? It was almost like I was welcomed back in, and they're from the West and proudly of that, because, you know, it takes place in kind of a fictionalised Swinford and Mayo. Yeah. And as I say, they're crude, but they're hilariously funny. And the central partnership of Eddie and his friend Buzz is brilliant. And the first episode, like, it's so uniquely Irish. So Eddie's living with Buzz in the cottage. He doesn't have to pay any rent. And his girlfriend, Kira, who's a diagnosed sex addict, wants him to move out. And there's an elongated storyline about how she brings him to a swingers club. Well, it's swingers house. And this is how uniquely Irish it is, because where else other than the West of Ireland would you walk into a swingers place? Would they welcome you and say, help yourself to carvery and coffee? And then at one point you go,
I don't know. Why is that unusual, John? Tell us.
Well, usually, no. I would imagine it is unusual. And, you know, at one point he says, I'm not going back in there. My geography teacher is in there. And as I say, so uniquely Irish. It's hilarious. They're just really fun. And yeah, it's, you know, it's a lot of jokes about, you know, penises and stuff like that.
Yeah, penises are funny. Penises are
always
funny.
They are funny. They are funny. I've always found it funny, and I've forgotten how funny I found it. And, you know, maybe one criticism of it, you know, Derry Girls and Young Offenders, which have been massive hits this year, and rightly so. Mm. Maybe it doesn't have the same heart as some of those, the sweetness, but it's fine. This is what it is. And the fact that it's still going 10 years on and they've a live show coming up, God bless them. You know, it's funny. It really is.
Yeah, well, because it does, you know, it now it feels a bit old-fashioned.
Yeah,
you know, they're two kind of like, you know, basically stoners. That is that kind of trope. It just happens to be in Swinford, so that maybe, you know, makes it more Irish for us. But is there any sort of, because even in the aforementioned Derry Girls,
yeah,
there's a kind of a light story arc, and very much there's much more of a trend now if story is even more important than the comedy. Is there any story arc here across the episodes, or are they just one-offs?
No, there will be things, and they're coming up with some. They have this in all episodes, money schemes, and they're going to do a virtual pub and stuff. But there isn't much. I mean, Eddie has a girlfriend now and she wants him to move out, but there aren't massive changes in it. The Viper character is now selling ice cream, which is doubling up as a place where he can sell drugs. So they're not moving on that much, but that's kind of the point. They're now in their 30s and they're still hanging around. There's a place for 30-year-old stoners, you know?
Indeed. Right, John, thanks very much for coming into us today. John Fardy there. Speaking of selling drugs, we're going to be talking next to you, God.
Moncrief on News Talk.
With Gas Networks Ireland. Natural gas is compatible with a wide range of modern appliances. Gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.
From the Wu-Tang Clan.